you. Ready for a deep dive? Today we're talking pollinators and how scientists study them.
Yes, exactly.
Specifically, these colorful pan traps.
Right.
And let me tell you, the research is showing some pretty wild stuff.
Yeah, it's really thrown a wrench into some of our assumptions about these traps.
Okay, so set the stage for us. What are we looking at today?
So you shared a research article called Color Pan Traps. Often catch less when there are more flowers around.
Okay.
It's a study done in Sweden, and it looked at whether or not the number of flowers surrounding pan traps actually impacts how many pollinators those traps catch.
Interesting.
They looked at six different insect groups. So that was solitary bees, social bees like bumblebees and honeybees, wasps, flower longhorn beetles, chafers, and hoverflies.
Wow, so a pretty good range.
And the findings are pretty significant for the way we think about pan trap data.
Okay, so break it down for me. What's the big reveal that has everybody talking?
Well, you'd think the more flowers would equal more insects in the traps, right?
Yeah, more food, more pollinators seems logical.
Yeah, you would think so, but get this, the study actually found the opposite.
Oh, really?
In most cases, more flowers actually meant fewer insects were caught.
Whoa, hold on.
Yes.
So more flowers equals less insects in the traps. It's
Right.
like the flowers are winning some kind of popularity contest or something.
Right, it's like they're being outcompeted by the real deal.
Yeah, okay, so they must have some theories about why this is happening because now I need answers.
Oh, they do. It's like a whole scientific detective story.
Okay, let's hear it.
One possibility is that the flowers are just way more appealing to those pollinators.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Like, if you think about it, why settle for a snack from a vending machine when you could have a gourmet meal at a fancy restaurant?
Exactly.
Okay, so flowers are the five-star dining experience. Got it. What other explanations are they exploring?
So another idea is this concept called pollinator limitation.
Okay.
So imagine you're at a buffet with endless options.
I love a good buffet analogy.
Right. Well, in that scenario, you might actually end up sampling less food overall because you're not as focused on getting to every single dish.
Oh, I totally get that. It's like decision fatigue for pollinators.
Yeah, exactly.
So when there are tons of flowers, they're less pressured to visit every single one,
Right.
including those traps. Okay, that's interesting. Any other theories they're working with?
Yeah, so the researchers also suggest that pan traps might actually be disproportionately attractive in areas with very few flowers.
Oh, interesting. So it's all about context.
Yeah, it's like stumbling on an oasis in the desert.
Right, it becomes a much bigger draw when there's less competition around.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're talking what types of insects, the colors, and the number of flowers, even the time of year. All of this is shaping how these traps work and ultimately how we need to be interpreting the data.
Absolutely. And what this research is really showing is just how nuanced it all is.
Okay, so give me an example.
Well, they found that some insect groups were much more susceptible to this negative bias. The phenomenon where more flowers mean fewer insects in the traps.
Okay.
For example, wasps were far less likely to be caught when there were abundant flowers nearby.
Really? So wasps are picky eaters?
Apparently so.
Okay, so who wasn't as bothered by the abundance of flowers?
Well, solitary bees,
Okay.
those independent pollinators that tend to stick closer to their nests, didn't seem to be as swayed by the flower abundance.
So their numbers in the traps stayed relatively consistent.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm guessing that has to do with how far these different insects travel, like social bees, bumblebees, for instance. They can cover much larger distances, right?
Exactly. And they also have a whole communication system within their colonies.
Right.
It's like they have a map to all the best flower patches.
So they're not as reliant on those pan traps for finding a good meal. They've got their own intel network.
Right?
This is making me rethink everything I thought I knew about studying pollinators. Okay. So what about the color of the flowers? Did that come into play at all?
Yes, absolutely. The study found that the presence of red flowers in particular had a significant impact on this negative bias. White and blue flowers, on the other hand, didn't seem to have as strong of an effect.
That's interesting now. Is it because insects see color differently than we do? I've heard they're like super sensitive to ultraviolet light and stuff.
You're exactly right. What we see as red might look completely different to a bee.
Oh, wow.
And that's a huge factor when you're trying to design a pan trap that's supposed to be appealing to them.
It's like we're trying to design a billboard in a language we don't even understand. No wonder there are so many variables to consider.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
There are even more factors that come into play, which we'll delve into in the next part of our deep dives.
Oh, I can't wait. All right, so we're back and ready to untangle some more of these pollinator mysteries.
Yeah, there's always more to learn about these fascinating creatures.
Okay, so last time we were talking about how more flowers can sometimes lead to fewer insects in pan traps, and we started to unpack why some insects might be more prone to this trap-avoiding behavior.
Right, we were discussing how solitary bees, those independent pollinators that tend to stick closer to home, seem less affected by flower abundance compared to their social bee counterparts.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the social bees with their sophisticated communication networks and ability to travel further. They've got access to better intel on the best flower patches.
Precisely, they've got their own foraging strategies and priorities. But here's another wrinkle. The researchers also found that this negative bias.
Where more flowers lead to fewer insects and traps.
Exactly. That
Yeah.
wasn't consistent throughout the year. It seemed most pronounced during the month of August.
August. Huh, that's interesting. I wonder if there's like a seasonal element at play here too.
It's definitely possible.
Are certain insect species more active or have different nutritional needs at specific times of the year?
Right, could be.
Does it line up with any particular life cycle events?
You're thinking like a scientist.
I try.
Insect populations can fluctuate dramatically throughout the year, so it makes sense that their foraging behavior and responses to pan traps might change as well.
Yeah, that makes sense.
August could be a time of peak abundance for certain flower species, or maybe it's a crucial period for certain insects to stock up on resources.
Okay, so we're talking about all these interlocking factors, the types of insects, the color and abundance of flowers, the time of year. It's like a whole web of interactions shaping pollinator behavior.
Exactly. And it all circles back to that big question: are pan traps actually giving us an accurate representation of what's happening with pollinator populations?
Right. Are they really painting the full picture?
That's the core issue. And while pan traps can be valuable for tracking population changes over time within a specific location,
Okay.
the researchers are urging caution when it comes to using them to compare different sites,
I see.
especially if those sites have significant variations in flower abundance.
Why is that? Wouldn't you just assume more flowers, more pollinators overall, regardless of whether they're landing in traps or not?
You'd think so,
Yeah.
but it's not that straightforward. Remember, if one site has a ton of flowers and another site has very few,
Okay.
the pan traps might not reflect the true differences in pollinator numbers between those two locations.
So you could end up with skewed data
Right.
and potentially misinterpret the results if you're not careful.
Exactly. And this is especially relevant when you consider that many conservation efforts focus on creating those flower-rich habitats.
Okay, yeah.
If we rely solely on pan trap data, we might underestimate the effectiveness of those efforts because the insects are simply opting for the more abundant and appealing natural food sources.
I see what you mean. It's like we're creating these pollinator paradises, but our measurement tools aren't quite capturing the full impact.
Right, it's a bit of a conundrum.
Okay, so the takeaway here is that context is everything. We need to be incredibly mindful of all these factors, the insect species, flower colors and numbers, the time of year, and the specific research question when we're interpreting pan trap data. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Yeah, it highlights the need for a more nuanced and holistic approach to pollinator research. It's not just about collecting data, it's about understanding the intricate ecological relationships at play.
It makes you wonder, though, are there ways to design better pan traps that are less susceptible to these biases?
That's a great question.
Could we somehow make them more appealing or adjust our methods to account for these variations?
Right, like how can we level up our understanding of what's really going on in the pollinator world?
Yeah, it's like we're trying to understand the world through the eyes of a bee, and we're still learning the language.
Absolutely. And that leads us to the final part of our deep dive,
Okay.
where we'll explore some of the other approaches researchers are using to uncover the secrets of the pollinator world.
We've been on quite the journey, haven't we? Exploring these pan traps and all the factors that influence how they work.
It's been fascinating, hasn't it?
One of the things that's really stuck with me is just how differently insects see the world compared to us.
Oh, absolutely.
We talked a bit about their sensitivity to ultraviolet light
Right.
and how that affects their perception of color.
Uh-huh.
It just blows my mind to think we're designing these pan traps based on our human vision,
Yeah.
when insects are experiencing this whole other dimension of color that we can't even fathom.
It really puts things into perspective, doesn't it?
It does. It makes you realize how much we still have to learn.
Right.
It's like we're trying to communicate with another species using a language we only partially understand.
And yet, despite that challenge,
Yeah.
there are so many brilliant researchers out there who are dedicating their lives to deciphering these secrets of insect vision and behavior.
It makes me wonder if cracking the code of insect vision could lead to even more effective conservation
Oh,
strategies.
that's a great point.
What if we could design habitats that are specifically tailored to the way insects perceive their environment?
That would be incredible, wouldn't it?
It would almost like designing a five-star resort just for pollinators.
I love that analogy.
Catering to their every need and preference.
Right.
Based on their unique sensory experiences. But in the meantime,
yeah,
we've still got those trusty pan traps as a tool in our research arsenal. Even with their limitations, they can still provide valuable information.
Absolutely, as long as we use them carefully and thoughtfully.
Right. So it's all about understanding the strengths and weaknesses of any scientific method and applying it appropriately.
Exactly.
So, for example, pan traps can be really useful for monitoring changes in pollinator populations over time within a specific area.
Right, like taking the pulse of the pollinator community in a particular location.
Exactly. We can track how their numbers fluctuate from year to year and get a sense of overall trends.
And by comparing data from different locations with similar flower abundance, we can start to piece together a broader understanding of pollinator dynamics across larger landscapes.
So it's like a giant puzzle, and each study is a piece that helps us see the bigger picture.
Exactly.
This research has shown us that there's no single perfect method for studying these creatures.
Right.
It's about using a combination of approaches.
Yeah.
Including pan traps, direct observation, and even genetic analysis to really unravel the mysteries of the pollinator world.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, this deep dive has certainly left me with a sense of awe and wonder for the incredible diversity and complexity of the natural world.
Me too.
And I'm just so grateful for all the researchers who are dedicated to understanding and protecting these vital creatures.
Absolutely.
And, you know, speaking of protecting pollinators,
yeah,
I think it's important to remember that we can all play a role in supporting them, whether it's planting a pollinator-friendly garden, reducing pesticide use, or simply spreading awareness about their importance.
Absolutely. Yeah. Every action, no matter how small, can make a difference.
So on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into the world of pan traps and pollinators. We hope you've enjoyed the journey and maybe learned a thing or two along the way.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And until next time, keep those minds buzzing with curiosity.